You know, one of the things that I have noticed is that in life, there's some things that we experience. And what happens for us in life is that there are things that you and I experience that are doubts that you can't reconcile, and there are questions that seem to have no answer. That there are doubts that you cannot reconcile, and there are questions that seem to have no answer. And because of these things, doubts that you can't reconcile and questions that you can't answer, because of these things, oftentimes many of us have decided, instead of being all in for God, we're just going to be a half a step in for God or one step in for God. And so we're saying, you know what? Because there's some things that I just don't understand, I don't get it, I don't recognize it, I have some questions, and whenever I ask people about this, those questions seem to be just not answered. They don't give me the right answers. And so I get so frustrated in these moments whenever those kind of things happen. I want to show you a book by a fellow by the name of Robert Adair, and it's called The Physics of Baseball. The Physics of Baseball. And Robert Adair, just so that you're aware, is a very, very smart guy. He was actually the chairman of the physics department for the University of Yale for a number of years. He's now retired. But Dr. Adair decided that what he was going to do is, for his lifelong passion, he loved baseball, and so he would sit down and he would take a look at the physics of how baseball works in different ways. And one of the things that Dr. Adair discovered is he looked at the idea of, what does a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, if you've ever watched baseball, and you see a 90-mile-an-hour fastball that's thrown by the pitcher and it goes right across home plate, and you see a person who decides to hit that, the idea is, he decided, let's look scientifically at how does that work. How does a 90-mile-an-hour fastball leaving a pitcher's hand end up getting hit by another person and it becomes a home run, or becomes a single or a double, or however that works? And so Dr. Adair decided to do this. And so here's what he discovered. He discovered that a 90-mile-an-hour fastball takes 400 milliseconds to leave the pitcher's hand and arrive at home plate. Now, for those of you who don't know what a millisecond is, everyone right now in the room, just blink. That's 300 to 400 milliseconds. That's how fast a pitcher on a mound. How many of you have ever seen a Major League Baseball game? Anybody ever seen one? Okay, most of us in the room. So then you have watched a person throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, and it's 400 milliseconds for that to leave and for that to hit home plate. Now, let's take a look at the batter, the person who is getting ready to decide whether or not they want to hit it. He discovered, in breaking it down, here's what happens, that it takes 100 milliseconds for the batter to pick the ball out of the hand of the pitcher. So as the pitcher is right here, it takes 100 milliseconds for the batter to say, that's the baseball and it's coming at me. And then it takes 100 milliseconds for the batter to say, am I going to swing or am I not going to swing? So 100 seconds, it's here. 100 milliseconds, excuse me. This is when it's getting ready. Am I going to swing or not swing? It takes 100 milliseconds to decide if you're going to swing high, if you're going to swing low, or if you're going to swing right down the middle, 100 milliseconds. And then here's the kicker. It takes 150 milliseconds to actually swing. Now, for those of you in the room who are math majors, it takes 400 milliseconds for a 90-mile-an-hour fastball to get to the catcher's hand, and it takes 450 milliseconds for somebody to hit the ball. Dr. Adair wrote this entire book talking about the science behind this, and the conclusion that Dr. Adair came to, Robert Adair, one of the smartest people who ever lived, was this: hitting a 90-mile-an-hour fastball is impossible. Here's the problem. Most of us in the room have seen somebody hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. And the problem that most of us have when we think about it from this perspective is this idea that we look at it and we see it and we say, I've seen it on TV. I saw a guy hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball over the fence. I've seen people hit 90-mile-an-hour fastballs in the major league all the time. And every time they tend to do it, I mean, they just show us that it's the way to do it. And yet, here is a scientist, one of the smartest people on the planet. He's a nuclear physicist. He chaired Yale's physicist department and this physics department and this guy here, one of the smartest guys on the planet, came to the conclusion that it takes more time to hit a baseball than it does for it to be thrown. It is an impossible task to happen. And the problem for most of us in the room is we know that it can happen. And here's what I want us to understand today. Because as we begin to think through some of the things of today, as we go talk them through, we're going to look at a passage of scripture in the book of John today. Because here's what happens for some of us is we get this unexplainable idea. Because even though it's impossible for a 90 mile an hour fastball to be hit, you and I say, I've seen it done. And it's unexplainable. And therefore, you believe that it can be done. And so here is the dilemma that we're faced with today. That almost in every area of life, we are willing enough to opt for the undeniable over the unexplainable, except our relationship with God. Because if you were saying, I've seen it, I can't explain it, but I know that somebody can hit a fastball. I know that it happens. And while it's not explainable, I've seen it. It's undeniable that it happens. And here's what happens to a lot of us in the room. And even your unchurched friends, whenever you talk to them and say, hey, would you like to come to church? And they're like, didn't science disprove the whole God thing? And you go, well, I really don't know. I haven't really figured that out. I don't know how this thing works. But you and I have a tendency to do the undeniable over the unexplainable all the time. Show of hands, how many people hopped in a car today or a truck or an SUV and got here? Anybody? Okay, all of us except about two of us. Good, good. Now, if I were to ask you in the room, give me an illustration and you explain to me all the way through of how when you decided to either put the key in or push the button or whatever it is that you do to get your car started, if I were to say, you tell me every single process that that happened in order for the car to get you here today, only a handful of us are car enthusiasts that would be able to explain the idea of how that happens. The rest of us would just say, look, I put the key in, and when I put the key in, it got here. If you've ever flown a plane, you don't get to the plane and you get to the place and you look over at the pilot and you say, look, I will not sit down until you explain to me every intricacy of what happens to get this bird off the ground. You don't do that. Why? Because you just know that that's going to happen. Let me give you another illustration. How many people in the room are married? Show of hands. How many people in the room are married? Okay, good, good. Explain to me the mind of a woman. Aha, aha. So we put the undeniable above the unexplainable in so many areas of our life, with the exception of one. When it comes to God, most of us in the room say, I want you to explain it first. You see, all of us have this struggle, and why is it that we do this? I mean, I have a tendency to do this too. When somebody comes to us and says, here's the change that happened in my life, a major life change that occurs, you want to just explain it away. You want to give 10 reasons of why that's supposed to happen. And so for us in Christianity, we have this tendency to do this. And here's the reason why. Because every one of us in the room have a God box. Whether you like it or not, you have a God box. And the God box is simply all of our assumptions about God. They're about the way I think God should operate. And so whether you think in a right way or you think in a wrong way, you have a God box. And here's the problem. If God doesn't do what you think he should do or do it in a way that you think he should do it, and it doesn't fit in your God box, many of us in the room would say, then God isn't true in this. God isn't right in this. And we have a hard time, most of us in the room, with this understanding and this idea, and we're saying, I can't explain it. I don't know how this works. So maybe it isn't true or accurate. And we allow people to get away with this all the time. And yet, in other areas of our arena, we just take the undeniable and we just say, okay, plane gets off the ground, I'll accept it. My car got me here, I accept that. I accept the fact that up is up and down is down. It's undeniable. Can't explain it, but I know that there's something out there. Maybe there's somebody out there that can't explain those kind of things. And so you and I have a tendency to make a God box and to put things inside of this God box and to decide whether or not it's undeniable or unexplainable. And today, the challenge of where we're going to go, and even the challenge today in our message of what's going to happen is, you're going to see people who say, it's undeniable. Can't explain it, but it's undeniable. And the story that we're going to talk about, you're going to see some folks that say, look, if you can't explain it, then it didn't happen. And this story is found in the book of John, the 9th chapter. So if you've got a Bible app, go ahead and turn there. If you've got a Bible, open it up to John chapter 9. If not, then follow along with the screen because the words will be on the screen here in John chapter 9. I want to read just the first few verses as we set this thing up. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Rabbi, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his sins or the sins of his parents? Do you notice this? The disciples have a God box. And in this God box, if somebody has something that's not right about them, their blindness, they can't talk, or maybe there's some kind of mental deformity that's inside of them. The idea of this for many of us in the room is we have a God box. And if they were born that way, we have assumptions of why they were born that way. It either happened because mom did something or dad did something, and we have these assumptions that take place. And here's the reality. For most of us, this isn't unique to just Americans. I was in Africa last month, and when I was there, the understanding is anyone there who is born with some kind of deformity. There was a person that was born there with a half of an arm, and so the idea was the people were blaming this person because either their sins or the sins of their parents. This is a common idea, and their thought is because this is my box, and my box says if you've got a problem, something occurred to you, then the problem. The problem is that it doesn't fit in this box, and if it doesn't fit in this box, somebody did something wrong. But listen to what Jesus says. He says it was not because of the sins of his parents, and it wasn't even because of his sins. Jesus says this happened so that the power of God could be seen in him. Wait a minute. That doesn't fit in my God box. And then Jesus would even say a verse later, he'd say, I'm here, Jesus said, and while I'm in this world, I am the light of the world. And his disciples really struggled with this. And you and I have a hard time with the unexplainable over the undeniable. And one of the reasons that we do is because people come to us and they'll say things like, why do good things happen to bad people? Why does it seem like that there are certain places in the world where God doesn't exist and people are dying left and right? How do those kind of things happen? And here's what I want to do, because I want to challenge you even more with an actual story, a live story of somebody from Crossroads who had to deal with the kind of pain in their life because somebody very close to them died, and now they have to grow up with this understanding that's different than most of us in the room. And some of us are going to struggle with this because we can't explain it, therefore it can't be accurate. Let's watch the screen together and see this story unfold in front of us.
I'm Ellie Hendrickson. I'm 18 and a senior at Northwestern. When I was a freshman, my dad got sick in January, and we had no idea what was wrong with him. Around spring break, we found out that he had cancer. And then he fought cancer for about 6 months doing chemo and radiation, and in December, he had his pancreas and gallbladder and spleen and a bunch of other things taken out. And he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Right before I went back to school my junior year, we found out that the cancer spread to his liver. And then he fought for a few months, and then in November he died. When my dad first got re-diagnosed, I knew that meant that we didn't have much time together anymore, because I know that even having the 2.5 years that I had with him was a miracle, because that just doesn't really happen with pancreatic cancer. And so we just spent the next few months doing everything together and just enjoying each other's company. When my dad first got sick, my faith was really shaky because I wasn't really involved in church so much. But through him being sick and after him dying, I've just like held on to my small group and my family. And it's really just completely changed my faith and made it so much stronger, and that I've really just been able to hold on to God and have peace and just be content. Something that was undeniably God was after he died at church camp, and I was just a huge ball of tears and a mess, and I just felt like I needed someone that was a man just to hold me and tell me that it was okay and that I just needed someone there for me. And then Luke came up to me and he just said that he felt God was telling him that he needed to be there. And I was just a mess. And that was undeniably God, because he used Luke to heal me. If you're going through something like this, in the end, you're going to need to talk to somebody, because there's so much going on inside of you that sometimes you need someone to just lean on to cry with, and someone that can also pour in God's love to you, because sometimes we don't feel it when we go through these things. We think that he's abandoning us, but he's not. He's using this for you and for someone else, so that when you go through this, you can also help somebody else, and that God is very apparent in the people that he puts in your life, and that he just uses other people to heal you so that you can help others, and that this isn't easy, and anything about this I wouldn't change, because I can help other people through this. I can't explain why God didn't heal him, but it's obvious that he was there and he was present, and that he is always present. At first, I just took everything day by day, moment by moment, and it wasn't easy. There were a lot of days or weeks where I was just not, I didn't feel like I could get through it, but now I feel peace, and I know that I will see my dad, and that I can use everything that has happened in my life and what God has done in my life to help others. And that is what gets me through.
I love the story of Allie. And part of the reason I love that story is because Allie has still a lot of questions that she can't answer. She has a lot of things that she says, you know what, I don't know. I don't know why this happened, why Dad didn't get healed, why Dad's not with us still today. And I know the family well enough to know that there were prayers that were lifted up from the family. There were prayers that were lifted up from many of you in this room, and the understandings and the ideas. And there is a tremendous amount of a lot of us in the room that say, I can't explain why this would happen. Why would God allow a man to die of cancer and leave behind a wife and a couple of kids? How does that work? But what I love about Allie is it's undeniable of what God's doing in her life. It's undeniable. And you and I still are wrestling with this. We're still wrestling inside. Because in our faith, some of us say, look, if I can't explain it, then God wasn't in it. If I can't figure this thing out, then where was God? And back at our story in John chapter 9, here are the disciples, and they're standing there talking to this guy. And then look what happens in the course of this conversation. Then Jesus goes over to the guy, spits on the ground, and he makes mud with saliva. And I don't know about you, I've got a 5-year-old son, and he likes to make mud with saliva. It's not the prettiest thing. I was going to do a live demonstration today, but I decided that for some of you, it's going to be a little difficult for me to do that. But here's the deal. He makes some mud with saliva, and he puts it together, and then he spreads it over the blind man's eyes, and then Jesus says to him, go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. The word Siloam means sent. And so here's what happens. This guy goes, and he went and washed, came back, seen, and then listen to this, because here is where some of us in the room come to this place where we put unexplainable over undeniable. His neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar asked each other, isn't this the man who used to sit and beg? Isn't this the guy? I mean, we've seen him every day. We're neighbors. We grew up beside this guy. And then listen to what happens. It says this. Some said he was. Others said, no, he just looks like him. Now, we grew up next door. I didn't know he had a twin brother. We were best friends. We played every day in the playground. But the point is this, if you can't explain it, then there's no way that it happened. There are people who are saying this kind of stuff. Is it any consequence that some of us, even in the room today, would come to this place? I mean, these are people who watched a miracle happen literally in front of their eyes, and they're still saying, surely it's not this guy. He continues on. He says, I am the one. Hello, hello. I would know. I see you. And some of you, I'm not real excited that I see you. But I'm the guy. And then they said, who healed you? What happened? We want to know. So he said to them, the man they called Jesus made mud, spread it over my eyes, and he told me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself. And then I did, washed myself, and now I can see. And then they're like, where is he now, they asked. I don't know, he replied. So now we have a problem. We've got a little bit of a dilemma here. Because here's the deal. Jesus decides to go ahead and Jesus heals the man born blind. He heals him. And now that Jesus has healed this man, we have a dilemma that begins to take place. And part of the dilemma that happens is this, is that some people are more interested in the undeniable and others are more interested in the unexplainable. That there are those people that go, yeah, I guess it happened. I mean, somebody could be healed. I've never seen it happen before, but it's undeniable. This guy's walking around. He is absolutely seeing. He's showing us that he can see. He's saying that he can see. He's showing every sign of the fact that he can see. But there's some people who go, you know what? I see it. I've noticed that, but it's got to be somebody else. It cannot be him. And the story continues in John chapter 9, verse 13 and following. So here's what they do. They said, "What? You know what? I'll know who explains this. The church will explain this. We'll take it to our pastor. That guy seems pretty smart. He'll figure this thing out." And so here's what they do. They took the man who had been born blind to the Pharisees because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud and healed him. And so here's the scenario that takes place. The Pharisees asked the man all about it. So he told them, he put mud over my eyes. When I washed it away, I could see. And some of the Pharisees said, this man Jesus is not from God. He's working on the Sabbath. No way could this guy be from God because everybody's got the rule. And the rule is nobody works on the Sabbath. So we've got a dilemma here. And then he continued on. Others said, but how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous signs? There was a deep division of opinion among them. And some of us in the room today are struggling with these two things. And if you could speak, you'd speak out right now and say, look, I've got questions. And pastor, I understand. I thought it was okay to question God. It is. I thought it was okay for me to not have some things answered. It is. But here's the problem. If it is in the way of you making steps towards God, then you may be saying, look, if I can't prove it, if nobody can show it to me, then I'm not fully in. And why is that? Why is that that you would do that in other areas of your life, but you refuse to do it with God? I have conversations with people on a regular basis, and part of the conversations I have with them fall into this same trap where they just say, you know, look, I don't go to church. None of that stuff's real. Surely science has disproved the whole theory of God. And we begin to have some kind of a conversation. And for them, there's too many questions that they cannot answer. But they'll accept this idea and this understanding. Recently, I was having a conversation with a guy who said to me, you know what? The truth is, the creation story, what a bunch of bunk. There is no way that could possibly happen. And I said, so then you tell me, what do you think happened? And he said, oh, they've proven it. What have they proven? Well, they proved that there was this big, huge thing that was spinning around, and then all of a sudden there's this boom, this big bang that came together, and then this big bang caused all kinds of the cosmos to align up in such a way, and now, billions of years later, here we are. And I said to my friend, I said, look, man, that's a good one. That's a real good one. I said, but let me ask you, what started the matter in the beginning? Well, it's just always been. Well, no, there's got to be something that put that matter in place. He said, well, I don't know. And I said, so you're telling me that the creation story cannot be true because there's some things that you can't explain, but you've accepted a theory of some things that you still can't explain. You see, what happens to some of us is that we put the unexplainable over the undeniable. And you're not alone. You see this in the story. Then the Pharisees begin to question the man again. And they're demanding now, what's your opinion about this man who healed you? The man replied, well, maybe he's a prophet. Well, that's a wrong answer. You don't want to say that in front of these guys. And so then they continue on. And in the next passage of scripture, in John 18, it goes to this. Then the Jewish leaders still refused to believe the man had been blind and could now see. So they called in his parents. That's what you do, right? If you go and you say, okay, this guy's, you know, I look, I can see. And they're like, really? How many fingers am I holding up? You're holding up two. Okay, well, I didn't know that. Well, okay, well, he just lucky guess, okay? Somebody stand across the room. And what color is Stan's hair? Well, Stan's hair's blonde. Oh, wow, wow, it's two guesses right in a row. Well, he's really good. And so how do we figure this out? Well, I know where we can get to the truth. His mom and dad will come in here. We'll call them in. And so the church leaders call in the parents, and then they look and they said to his parents, they asked him, is this your son who was born blind? If so, listen to this word. How can he see? How can he see? This doesn't make sense. And so the parents, we know this is our son. We didn't have twins. Mom's saying, I was there. I know it. And then here we are. He was born blind, but we don't know how he can see or who healed him. So what do? Ask him. He's old enough to speak for himself. He's a big boy now. And part of the reason why they wanted to ask him was because of this. They go in, and his parents were afraid of the Jewish leaders because they had told everyone that if anybody said Jesus was the Messiah, they were expelled from the synagogue. Basically, they were condemned to hell by saying that Jesus was the Messiah. And so his parents are so afraid that this is going to happen. They're so afraid that's going on. And so what they do, they just turn around and just said, ask him. He's old enough. Ask him. Why? Because we don't want to have to mess with this. And then the story continues. So the second time they called in the man who's been born blind. I don't know about you, but he's probably thinking, man, I've got this sight and now my legs are tired because I'm going back and forth and back and forth. He comes in and they said to him, God should get the glory for this because we know this man Jesus is a sinner. And the guy says this, I don't know whether he's a sinner, but he continues on and he says, but I know this, I was blind and now I can see. But what did he do, they said. Now they're sitting there, and you got to understand, the guy's got to be looking at him going, what did he do? Hello, hello. I'm seeing you. That's what he did. But listen to how they respond here. How did he heal you? Do you get this idea of the unexplainable? This couldn't happen. This can't happen. If we can't explain it, then it didn't happen. And here's the challenge for us. I believe that some of us sometimes are so focused on the how that we might miss the who. Is that you? Man, I got a lot of friends who just say this whole Christianity thing can't be true. It's not real. It doesn't really happen. And part of it for them is because they go, I got so many questions. And the truth of the matter is I have a God box. And the questions, if you give me the wrong answers, won't fit into my God box. And if they don't fit into my God box, to be honest with you, it cannot happen. And so many of us in the room and many of you watching online and many of you who are going to see this video over the course of the next few weeks are going to be saying to yourself, I would rather know the how than for me to know the who. And because of this, you're so focused on the how that you miss the who. And this is exactly where the Pharisees were. And so here's what happens. They call this guy in, and they cursed him. And they said, you are his disciple, but we're disciples of Moses. We can explain Moses. We know it's undeniable that God spoke with Moses because we have based our entire religious structure on the fact that God spoke to Moses. Everything about us, all of our stuff, is based on the fact that God spoke to Moses. So we know God spoke to Moses, but we don't even know where this man comes from. Now they're saying, does this guy even exist? Is this guy even around? Who is this Jesus guy? Why, that's very strange, the man replied. Now, this is the guy who just got healed, and he's now looking at the religious leaders, and here's what he's saying to them, because he's now healed. He can see. He's seen things he never saw before, and he's saying this: he healed my eyes, yet you do not know where he comes from? We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but he is ready to hear those who worship him and do his will. And you can imagine what this does. Because in this moment, in the frustration of this, it absolutely angers everyone else around him. And so then listen to what he says. The very next slide: ever since the world began, no one's been able to open the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't have done it. And this is how he concludes by saying one of the greatest statements: you were born a total sinner, they answered. Are you trying to teach us? And then they threw him out of the synagogue. They're angry with him. And then here's how this guy concludes this conversation. This is how he concludes the conversation with the things that he's talking about. Because here's what he says in the last slide. He says this. Go to the next slide here. Jesus, because here's the question. When Jesus heard about what had happened, he found the man and he asked him, do you believe in the Son of Man? And the man answered, who is he, sir? I want to believe in him. You know why the guy's saying this? Because now the guy's at a place where he recognizes, I was kicked out of my old faith and I need something to believe in. And I'm willing to take the undeniable and I'm willing to put it over the unexplainable. And here's why, because the guy says this. Jesus says, you've seen him, and he's speaking to you. And he says, yes, Lord, I believe. And he stopped, and he worshiped Jesus. So here's my question to you. How does this work for you? Because I believe that sometimes some of us in the room, we're so willing to choose the unexplainable over the undeniable. That some of you are at a place in your life where you're ready to choose this. And you're ready to say, the unexplainable, I don't get it, I don't understand it. And when it comes to my faith, this is the case. And here's the thing, even as Christians, we have a tendency to do this. Let me give you an example. We had Christmas Eve services here at Crossroads and our North Campus and here and online. And over the course of Christmas Eve, we saw nearly 700 more people come to our Christmas Eve service than we've had ever in any of our previous Christmas Eve services. It was an amazing event. People accepting Christ, people moving forward in their faith, taking action in their faith. It was an obvious movement of God. And yet in the middle of that conversation, a person that I love and trust very closely to me came to me and said, you know what? Here's the reason why we had so many people. The weather was nice. It happened on a Monday. These are the cases. Why? Because even as Christians, you and I are more interested in explaining this is why this movement happened. It happened because of this, not because of the undeniable nature that hundreds of people showed up and people found Christ. We do this when our kids go off to camp, right? They come home and they're so excited and they're like, woo, I'm so excited about Jesus. And then you and I as parents have a tendency to say, look, it's a camp high. It'll wear off in a couple of weeks. And 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, we see all kinds of change happen in the course of our kid. But we both say, you know what? That's only been 2 weeks. It's only been 3 weeks. Eventually, they'll be back to normal. As Christians, we fail at this over and over again. Now, I want you to hear something, because some of you may misinterpret what I'm saying. You may be saying, you know what, Pastor? So you're telling me I never question anything? No, I'm telling you to question. And questioning's a good thing. As a matter of fact, when the day comes and I get to heaven, I've got a list of questions for God that's going to dwarf probably most of your list of questions. And I'm not trying to one-up you here. I'm just saying that as a pastor, I've seen things that I cannot explain. I've watched things that I cannot believe happen. There are moments that I've seen where I've had situations like the story here where I see kids lose their parents and I keep asking God, why in the world would you let that happen? I've been in places before where I've seen it. I watched busloads of of Africans drive through Africa because they were trying to escape places like Somalia or the Congo because of the persecution that they're experiencing only because they call on the name of Jesus. I watch people who struggled and told stories of genocide in their neighborhood and in their areas and how they have barely experienced the opportunity to go get away from it. There are things that are so unexplainable because I would say, God, please, where are you in all these things? How do these things happen? But here's my question. If this is your driver, if this is the driver in your life, and this is the number one thing that's driving you, then when God decides to show up, you still will probably miss him. Because much like the people in the story, you'll be the one that says, surely it's not the guy we know. Surely it's not him. 2019. We're a couple of weeks into the new year. And as we close out today's service, I want to give us three challenges for all of us in the room struggling with this undeniable versus unexplainable, and what is it that we decide to put at the top of the run here? First off, let me just talk to the people in the room that are Christians. Because I know that for some of you in the room, you've said yes to Christ and you follow him and the undeniable is there and you just know it. And there are times people say, explain it to me. And you're like, I just can't, but it's true. It happens and you believe it. Then let me just say this to you. Will you take a step this year in your faith? Because here's the thing. If you believe that you're all in, then there should be something in you that says, I'm willing to step one step further than I ever did before. We're putting together a couple of trips to Africa, and some of you may need to get on a plane for the first time in your life and leave the United States of America and see the poverty that's happening in places like Africa or Jamaica. Others of you in the room may need to take this step by saying, you know what? I'm going to see about God's word, and I'm going to begin to decide, is God's word true or not? I'll study it every day, and you need to choose that your next step is that you will read your Bible every day because you are so willing to talk it away. You're so willing when your friends say, well, tell me, how true is that? You're so willing to do that because you've spent so much time studying everything except Scripture. Maybe it's time for you to study the very thing that you say can't possibly be the truth. Maybe for some of you, it's getting into a group. It's recognizing that, because here's the thing, I've learned in my life that when I don't have a group, then I'm always right. Because if I'm my own opinion, I'm never wrong. And some of the reasons that some of you don't want to get into a group is because you're afraid somebody's going to give you an opinion and they're going to say, well, I don't know about that. And you're going to say, whoa, wait a minute. I don't want to hang out with this person. And so maybe that's a step for you. So if you're a Christian, what's your next step? I'd just like for you to fill in the blank. You have it right there in your program. Go ahead and fill it in. If you want more steps to fill in, obviously today we have hundreds of extra programs. You can get extra programs and fill in more steps, okay? So however you want to do this, feel free to do this, okay? But there's a second group in the room. And I would venture to say that there's more of you in this group than you think. And that's the group of people who have both feet on the brakes. Man, you paused in your faith. And you stepped out enough. Maybe you're one of the 120-some people last year that said yes to Jesus and took your next step in baptism here at Crossroads. Maybe you're one of the over 400 people who said yes to Jesus through the ministries last year and invited him into your life, but there's something about you that took just a baby step in and you've paused. You've put the brakes on growing in Christ. You've said, this is enough. And part of the reason for you is because these two things are really a struggle for you and you've got way too many questions and people are saying to you, hey, I noticed a change in you. And you're like, yeah, I became a Christian. And they're like, no, I think you're losing weight, or I think you're eating better. That's what it is. Or I think you're at least confronting problems in your life, but there's got to be some explanation for the change that's occurred in you. And you've got the brakes on because these are people you love and respect and you're struggling with it. Then here's the thing. If you're willing to do this, then I'm going to make a challenge. You step out boldly enough and pray this prayer. God, if you're real, make it clear. Make it clear. And then I want to know you, God. I'm willing to find more answers to my questions. You say, some of us have this laziness in us where we're like, okay, God, if this is real, make it clear. But I'm going to keep looking at everything that talks against you instead of looking at the things that are for you. And maybe that's the challenge for you. I would venture to say that there's some of you sitting at home right now. That part of the reason that you sit at home is because you've said to yourself, I'll never step foot in a church again. They hurt me. That's what church people do. And quite honestly, the reason that you refuse to step into a place like this is because for you, there's too many things that are unexplainable. So why would I want to show up and see lives changed, differences made? And so I challenge you to make this prayer. God, if you're real, make it clear. And Lord, I want to know God, and I'm willing to find more answers to my questions. Be willing to step out there. And then there's the third group of people in the room. And the third group of the people are those of you who said, I've seen enough. Man, I'm in. Count me into this. I'm ready to take everything I have and be all in for God. I'm all in for this place. I'm all in to make this happen. And this is the very reason we created Crossroads and Six. Why? Because not just if you're a first timer that you get to come and hear our six core values, but the idea of Crossroads and Six is simply this. Because you're saying, I'm in. I want to serve here. I want to get involved in a group here. I want this to be a place where I connect. I want this to be a place where I'm willing to take the undeniable and I'm willing to put it over the unexplainable. That there are going to be moments that I will see life change occur. There will be moments that I'll see things happen and I will not be able to understand it, but I do know this. I want this to be a place that I'm a part of. And so I would encourage you at the end of our service, whether you've been here one day or whether you've been here 5 years, to come right over here to my left, right over in the corner there on the other side of the baptistry, and sit down with our folks and begin to say, hey, I'm in. Go to Crossroads and Six. It's 6 minutes or less, and it's an opportunity for you to find a connection. You know where you are in this journey. And so I invite you to be a part of this today.